Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and together with my co-host Marvin Smith, we're bringing you Answers for the Family. Each Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, this show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, we will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. We will introduce you to specialized schools and treatment programs that can really help, talented authors, and new innovations in the areas of health, security, and love for your family. With over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of these helping fields. Now, our guest today, Dr. Lois Lee, is a pioneer in saving children who are victims of human trafficking, blazing the trail for academics, researchers, law enforcement, social service providers, and legislators. She is the founder and president of Children of the Night, the first established anti-sex trafficking program in North America. Now, since 1979, her organization has rescued over 10,000 American children from prostitution in the United States. Now, I want to share that again. 10,000 American children from prostitution in the United States. Now, since 1988, she has served as an expert witness for federal and state prosecutors enforcing laws against pimps. Now, Chapter 5 of her PhD dissertation, The Pimp in His Game, continues to be relied upon by vice officers, district attorneys, FBI, and U.S. attorneys as a guide for the treatment of child prostitutes. Now, Dr. Lee has been profiled on national television, including her life being portrayed in a 1985 CBS Movie of the Week entitled Children of the Night. And she was lauded by rock musician and songwriter Richard Marx in his song Children of the Night, which appeared on his 1989 Repeat Offender album. Now, in the last three decades, Dr. Lee has raised over $40 million to provide these crucial services. And her track record is impressive because Children of the Night graduates have gone on to become lawyers, executives, and educators, among other professions. Dr. Lee, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much.
Well, it is great to have you here. Marvin has now joined us as well. And one of the things that I was discussing with Marvin prior to having you on the show is that as an investigator who started in about 1979, I have known about the good works of your organization, and I'm just so thrilled to have this opportunity to finally meet you.
Well, it's nice to be able to do a radio show with people who are in the know, because you eliminate all those silly questions.
Ooh, I, 1979?
Here comes the silly question. Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, that means you must be a fossil. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me get serious here. Let me get focused. I'm sorry, Alan.
Not a problem at all, because as many people know, you and I are the same age. So
really? So, are you really? You think so, huh?
Sling it all you want. So, but I think, you know, some of the things that I know that we want to touch on while we're here really has to do with kind of what's going on out there, and one of the questions that, and I know that I had asked just recently, I was at the gym and I was starting to prepare some of the questions and such, and one of the people that knows me comes up and goes, okay, so who's going to be on Monday? And I started to tell them about Children of the Night, and they literally the all of the blood rushed out of their face and they went, oh my God, wow. You're kidding me. I mean, this really happens here in the United States? And
yes.
Of course it does. So, explain a little bit, to the listeners about you know, what this type of exploitation, this type of exploitation is, and what you're doing to change it.
Well, I've been working with these children before the word trafficking was even applied to them. We're talking about child prostitution.
Yeah.
And the sex trafficking organizations many times are more harm than they are good, because they've created this image of the victim being a blonde-haired, blue-eyed girl laying in her bed with a down comforter and loving mom and dad in the other room, and the boogeyman reaching in the window and stealing her and forcing her to have sex. That's not who we're talking about. We're talking about children who are born to parents who are crack addicts. They come from families characterized by chaos, domestic violence, child sexual abuse, adult abuse, mental illness, substance abuse. They often live in areas that are so dangerous that social workers won't dare go. They're easily identifiable, but many of them do not receive intervention. As much as the people for political motivation say that we fail children in foster care, most of these children never entered foster care. And to me, it's very frustrating because there is not the passion in America to do something with these children before they're actually having sex and have fully developed. And I spoke to a child psychologist a few years ago, a specialist, and I said, explain to me, I'm working with the FBI. We have a teenage prostitute. They're very interested in the case. They're going to arrest the pimp. She's 15 years old. She's very well developed. She's telling me that she's changing clothes with four or five other teenage girls getting ready for prostitution, and there are babies, babies in the room watching moms get dressed for prostitution. Babies sleeping in the back of the car while the moms are performing sex acts with adult men. And the FBI is not interested. What are we dealing with here? And he said to me, I'm going to tell you very frankly and very simply, people are sexually aroused by the human sex trafficking issue. They don't want to deal with the ugliness that characterizes this particular social problem. These are not children that you're going to brush off and send on their way. My staff will tell me that oftentimes people in these trafficking organizations will say, if Lois cared about these kids, she'd come down and sit in our meetings. And my staff would go, oh, you don't know who you're talking about, because she will say that if you cared about these kids, you'd come down to the shelter and help her comb bugs out of their head. So there's a big difference between doing and saying. And my work has always been about doing. And even though I started as a young graduate student and I was suing the police department for not arresting customers, I mean, I was one of the first people to do that. Now what I think people are doing is stupid, you know, but... I caught a serial murderer because it was not a priority for the police. They had killed, you know, 10 young prostitutes. And I found children on the streets, and I let them sleep on my couch. And I was teaching college and writing my dissertation. I had no interest, really. I was not a social worker. I have a sociology PhD in sociology and anthropology, and I'm a lawyer. So I'm not... I did this because of the fact of all of the things that I was saying and accusing everybody else of. I was still confronted with children in my front yard, and I did something about it. And I continue to do something about it. And to me, to deal with so many of the social problems we have today are so simple. And in many ways, you don't really need to have college degrees. You need to have compassion. You need to have good personal boundaries. But you have to work really hard. And there are so many people who want to sit in meetings and want to talk about it and want to advance themselves rather than to lean down and help someone get up. You know, and oftentimes the people who are helping those have a vested interest in keeping them down. You know, when I tell people, you know, they're working in human trafficking, I put seven kids in college last year. I'm going to do our 36th anniversary this year, and I hate to even say this, but two of my graduates who are no longer children are retired Homeland Security. You know, there are people that these kids can do stuff.
Yes.
But the helpers often are the ones who don't want to see them succeed because they don't exist unless they keep them down. And it infuriates me.
I call it keeping a job.
Yeah, I guess. But, I mean, there's so many victims.
You're right. And I'm one to, I think we both can be real sentiment about the fact that, I mean, I'm involved in education reform. And, you know, I find myself in the middle of battles that, not that I'm taking credit, but it's that the passion to see something different for those who need the help.
Yes.
Who need the support. And if not us, then who? If not, when? You know, and for me, it's that attitude of, you know, it's really interesting, a scenario that two things. Years ago, I had a young lady, well, had a charter school, a middle school that we had developed in a certain city, which was, inner city, urban, and worked real hard for the students. We had social welfare coming in, but, you know, the whole thing was to give these kids a chance. And I happened to watch the news one day, and one of my bright students, and I knew, I said, she's going to be a shining star someday. And she was a nice-looking young lady. And I mean, I said, one day she's going to be a shining, she's going to be beautiful, she's going to have a successful husband. Mom's going to keep on a beaten path. But there were some issues at home. And a lot of the students that we had came from single-parent households. Not say that a single parent can't raise kids, but...
There's struggles.
There's struggles. Mm-hmm. There are real struggles. And this kid was between mother and father. Father was real heavy-handed. Mother was more open-handed. Needs. And one day I see her on television where she was part of that issue of... She was a teen... That was a young prostitute, and she said she had, but she always had a lot of courage back then. I saw it. And I looked at TV. I go, that's not really, and I said, well, it would have to be her to be the one to be the whistleblower, because what happened? She said, enough's enough. She said the only reason why she stayed in it, she said, I thought he loved me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he and I.
We must get that life with a pimp for these children is better than life at home. Now, that's a really tough concept, but
exactly.
It's true.
Yes. Exactly.
Because a pimp pays more attention to these children than the teachers, the parents, the neighbor, the minister, whoever it is that should be responsible for, or all of us should be responsible for our children. I mean, at least with a pimp, you know what time you get up, you know what you go out to do, you know how much money you have to bring in, you know if you get your butt kicked, it's because you screwed up. I mean, that's the game.
Sound like a parent. Sound like parenting.
Kids say you sound like a pimp.
Hey, when to get up, when to go to school, when to come home, do your chores. You know, but there's structure.
Exactly. Yeah.
Structure.
And with that structure is attachment, and with that attachment is some kind of feeling. I mean, a good pimp knows that you never beat your prostitute without following it with tender lovemaking. And I've seen. I watched a little girl, 13-year-old girl, challenge her pimp in a pimp bar in Hollywood many years ago. And he drug her out by the hair, and I saw her the next day. She was missing a tooth, black and blue eyes. And I said, you know, Glenda, why'd you do that? And she said, because I knew he'd make love to me afterwards. So that's kind of pathology we're dealing with.
Yes.
But where do you have to come from for that to be endearing?
Right. What else is missing?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know what? We have a question that was emailed in. And again, I want to thank everybody that takes the time. I know that everybody can't listen live, and so they send in the questions and want to listen later after they get home from work. But this one, I think, touches right on that subject. This says, I have recently lost touch with a friend who met a guy in Las Vegas. She has changed her phone number and didn't even call her mother on Mother's Day. I thought the guy was kind of creepy when we met him. She went back to Vegas to see him again and said she thinks she's in love with him. What can we do?
Well, it's just like I say to you, that woman you're with is no good for you. She's using you, and you need to dump her. Who am I to tell you that? We all have friends we do that to. It's the same thing. And this man, whether we like it or not, is paying more attention to this girl than anybody else. So unless you're willing to step into those shoes and to parent her or to be the appropriate adult role model and help her with school and to show her hope, there's nothing that can be done. So don't come to me. I mean, I used to find runaways. Hollywood Station used to send them to me all the time. And then you find parents that go, oh, thanks for finding her. But they didn't want her.
They didn't want her.
You know,
yes.
So that's the big piece. You got to get in there and compete with the pimps. And it can be done. I'm living proof. The kids that I've helped, over 10,000 kids. But it's time intensive. It's a gift of time.
Yes.
And you can't buy that. You can't. you can't provide it by committee, by bureaucracy. You're either there or you're not there. And that's who's waiting for your children if you don't want to be there for them.
That's a great point. And again, you want to either provide the loving environment, you know, or know that somebody else may very well provide an environment that takes them away.
It's not just a loving environment. It's time. It's time. I mean, you see, you notice in kids, foster kids, they go back to that abusive parent, you know, because of the fact that parent there, and sometimes they take care of that parent and stuff, but it's the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think like you, what you said too, Dr. Ali, action.
Yes.
Action speaks louder than words. And one thing about teens and kids, and I deal with it every day, I hear what you're saying, but I see what you're doing.
Yes.
And what you're doing is not lining up to what you're saying, so I'm really looking at what you're doing. And that's dictating more than what you're saying. You know, so you're right. I think when you really think, when you start to think about it, us as a community, us as a society, for Resolve is taking people with passion like yourself. I look at some of the things that Alan has done over the years, and I take myself, and it's just having that passion to do something, to make a difference, and be willing to stand up, or I commend you, and not look for the hurrah, not look for the pat on the back, and doing because you're just passionate about what you're doing, for what's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well,
and it's very simple. I mean, that's what's so frustrating about it is it's so simple. But, you know, people are not willing to do the work, and the work's not necessarily fun all the time.
Now, can you share with our listeners a little bit about the statistics? I know that there are statistics that flow depending on who you're talking to and if it's a government agency or whatever. The reality of it is, what are the statistics of children that are out there and being exploited through prostitution?
Nowhere near as high as what you're being told, number one. Oh. Number two, there has never been a study, and I just said this to Supervisor Sheila Kuehl, is that how
you say
her name?
Yes, yes.
I said, go get yourself a PhD student, not a DCFS person. Mm-hmm. Throw a couple $1,000 at them and stick them in the juvenile halls to interview girls and ask them how many are prostituting. Let's get some numbers. Nobody has ever done that. So the General Accounting Office did a study in 1981 and said there were 600,000 children under the age of 16 working as prostitutes in the United States. I think that was a good number because Congress had changed the law where the police could no longer arrest kids for runaway and truancy, and the streets were flooded with kids. Mm-hmm. By around 2000, you started to see the gangs start to move in, and the FBI came in with some tough laws. And someone called me from Washington and said, how many do you think? I said 300,000. Next thing I knew, numbers all over UNICEF and all over the world. And, you know, and they called me a few years ago, and I say, I think it's 100,000. I just watched these numbers go, you know, and I probably am the person that has the best educated guess, but it is an educated guess.
Yes.
Now, every child, every girl who's in juvenile justice is not a sex trafficking victim, mm-hmm. and they're lying to you. When they tell you that all these girls are affected by sex trafficking. The gangs, and I'm a Huffington Post blogger, I'm about ready to write this blog about how the Crips and FBI cleaned up child prostitution in America. And the gangs have taken over prostitution. The feds came in with such tough laws, and I think they were good, that said that if you prostituted a girl under the age of 14, it was life in prison, and now you have torture and kidnapping charges. So pimps aren't stupid. Why would you pimp someone under the age of 18? Take an 18-year-old who's got a baby and hold the baby, who's nobody's interested in anyway. So, and then in order to get the money. But now the trafficking laws apply to those girls too. So, why would you go out and perform an act of prostitution when you could climb into someone's house and steal all their stuff? So residential burglaries are the crime. The gangs control children. The girls are involved in prostitution. Same profile, same kid. They're doing residential burglaries, and you can look at the crime reports and what's happening at the police departments. That's where we're putting our police efforts. A little bit of petty theft, a little bit of prostitution, a little bit of drug trafficking. So kids are saying to me in juvenile hall, Lois, why do we have to be sex trafficking victims? Why are they running us through this court and saying we're sex trafficking? I've never done anything like that. Probation officers are coming and saying, I went out to interview my kids that were sent through the sex trafficking court. They've never done that. Now we're talking about millions of dollars to open up McLaren Hall and to create a lockdown facility to keep these girls, these sex trafficking victims. Well, they aren't sex trafficking victims. Same profile of a kid. And I don't believe in secure detention. I don't believe it is. I mean, there's some kids that you just, they're over the line. You're not going to be able to change them. Right. But for these kids, you make up your mind. Are they victims? If they're victims, then why are we locking them up and forcing treatment?
Right.
And if you have programs, they go, well, we set up these programs and the kids run. I'd run from your program, too. I've seen it. So until we're willing to compete with, yes, with what the pimp provides and get out there and take care of these kids. And it's so doable. A few years ago, I met in Oakland a police officer who said they went into one of the worst schools, high schools in Oakland, police and fire. And they said, this is it. They put in metal detectors. Oh, it's illegal. Who cares? They took over the football team. They had some of the toughest gangsters participating in sports. The grades went up. And as long as they held it together, it was really functional. And they were changing the community. You know, I have hopes and that, you know, because people in the 60s are starting to age out, that maybe we would go in and take over what's going on. But the bureaucracy, the fat,
yes,
the BS, the money, the corruption is just so overwhelming that, and it's so big that it breeds itself.
Yes.
So I'm not willing to play that game. I continue to operate on the outside. I'm privately supported, and I have as many people who hate me as love me.
Well, and as you bring that up, okay, for those people that want to help, and I run into that frequently when I'm talking to people, and they say, oh, that's going to be a great show. You know, what can I do to help? What can they do to help if they want to get involved with Children of the Night and try and make a difference?
Alan, before we go there,
yes,
I have a thought.
Okay.
Because I love what Dr. Lee is sharing. It's very educational. Can I add one question before that?
I guess.
Well, our listeners, you know, fundamentally, what's the difference between a pimp and human trafficker?
Well, they're the same. They're absolutely the same. They've just sexed it up with the term human trafficking, right?
Yes.
It's the same thing.
Because I wanted to ask you, because all the work that you were doing, going all over the place and the human trafficking and, you know, so I thought that was just interesting because, you know, the term, and I think about neighborhood, makes a big difference how we look at that, but that's a good point.
Right.
Okay, but so again, how can they help? Because
go to our website, yeah, and there's a donate button on every single page, and donate there with your credit card. You can be a monthly donor. You know, we're supported still largely by grassroots, by people send us $15, $25 a month, and we have some major donors who keep us alive during those tough times. And also we have volunteers, and we have a tough little volunteer application process. We don't mess around. If you can't, you know, meet the threshold, then I can't use you, because this is about taking care of kids and raising kids. It's not about taking care of appeasing other groups of people. And I'm very adamant about that.
All right. Now, and for those of you, if you are at your computer now, you can open up another window. You'll be able to still listen to us, but you can open up another window. Go to childrenofthenight.org. If you go there now, you can open up, you can see what we're talking about, you can learn more about what is really going on out there, and there are some things, again, that we're talking about, things that you can do to make a difference. And I think that's really the bottom line for all of us, is if we're going to make a difference, figure out what it is that you can do. You may have time, you know, you may have some knowledge in an area that could be beneficial. If you don't have time, you may have money that you can donate to allow other people to make a difference.
Well, back to the questioning.
Pimps, yes,
and prostitutes and
that's really, you know, what it is, trafficking and sex trafficking victims. You know, and I say to my kids, you know, this is something that happened to you. It doesn't define who you are. And, you know, when you, there's all these treatment programs now to cure someone from sex trafficking. Well, sex trafficking and prostitution is not a disease. It's a symptom of something else.
Something else.
And underneath that, you're going to find mental illness, and you're going to find substance abuse, and you're going to find cutters, and you're going to find eating disorders and all kinds of other treatments. So, but there's these people who have surfaced, this cottage industry of people who are sex trafficking experts that wouldn't have a clue how to deal with any of those underlying issues. And so I talk a lot about, you know, if you can't help a crippled child or a blind child or development disabled child, what makes you think you can help a child who's been sex trafficked? You know, okay, that's the term you want to use. It's, You know, these are children who really need help. The other thing is that if you're going to design a program, if you don't design a program that gives these kids hope, by the time you're selling your body, it is your last-ditch effort to better your life.
Better your life.
If I can't give you a program that's going to show you immediately that I can better your life, then you're not going to stay with me. And why should you? You know, so we operate an on-site school, and kids come in, and they sit down, and they see other kids like them. We only take children involved in prostitution. And one of our kids just scored second in the L.A. County Science Fair.
Nice.
She's headed
That's
for
good.
State competition. Every year we get some kind of mention.
Yes.
I have a PhD and a law degree, so sorry, my kids have to work. And people go, well, they don't do chores. No, I figure algebra is punishment enough. So, because we're going somewhere.
Yes.
But they see kids just like them starting to move and being able to do things. And if you leave, and okay, so you leave and you go back to a pimp and you come back again. And hey, that girl you came in with, it was just a dummy. Now she's in college. How did that happen? And so that tends to be the motivating, the drawing, because things are happening at Children of the Night. And you want to drop out, and we lose 20%. You want to drop out, drop out. But we're going straight ahead. You come back, get back on the team.
Yeah, and I think it's great too, because it gives teens an opportunity to see people like them, or have been like them, who stuck with it and achieving. And otherwise saying, right, it can be done. And I really believe what you shared too, as far as, you know, I always use the term two things. We talk about in the bureaucrats. We always talk about, I use the call it the ice bird, what's the term, syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we only see 10% of the iceberg.
Right.
And we focus on what we see.
Mm-hmm.
But 90% of that is beneath the surface. And those are the drivers to that behavior we see. But we spend so much effort on the small percentage and get small results, versus if we dive deep,
right,
we could have major change what's on top.
Yes.
And people, you know, it's always we go by what we see and not wanting to go deep and do the work.
Right.
And which is interesting. So it's good.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break right now. We will be right back. We are talking with Dr. Lois Lee, and we are talking about Children of the Night.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
They're all trying to be the next Madame Curie.
And we are back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking about Children of the Night. We have a comment that has come in, again, through email, and thank you for taking the time to do this. This one says, I've been attending classes on human trafficking and did not realize how many youth in our midtowns are involved. Not just the big cities have been luring teens into prostitution. Our church has taken on tackling this problem. Thank you for the great work you are doing.
Oh, thank you so much. And the reason you don't know is because they create... I have a little girl that a local newspaper came in to interview our kids, and I said, how many of you were human trafficking victims? Now, mind you, all of these children prostituted with the pimp. Many of them are testifying against pimps across the country. Not one hand went up. So one of them said, you know, in high school I wrote a paper on human trafficking, but I had no idea that's what I was doing. And that's because of the bad job that the human trafficking organizations have done. They've created this illusionary, sexy, little, trendy social movement. And I've totally missed the victim. And they've created this interest, you know, with these classes and stuff. It's, you know, I've said recently, I was doing some work in Europe, and I said to the members of parliament, how many sex trafficking victims have you met? And they go, well, none. And I said, well, why not? They said, well, the NGOs tell us that they're too damaged for us to meet them. And I said, did it ever occur to you that they're not doing what they tell you? They said, you know, we were just talking about that. I said, if they're that damaged, all the more reasons to take members of parliament and rub their nose in it and say, you got to do something.
Right.
And if they're doing a good job, all the better to go and show off. So, you know, the bottom line is, and we get these studies from universities, an amazing major university saying there are 4,000 beds for sex trafficking victims in America. Well, I have to hand it to a program assistant and say, call them before I put it in my hotline, because at 3 o'clock in the morning, I can't figure out if you're just full of yourself or or if you really got a bed for a 14-year-old and you're in Minnesota. And she comes back. She goes, there's 48 beds, and we got 24 of them.
Nice.
We have a property. We're going to. Somebody's going to drop out of the sky and do this for us. Well, it's not that way. It's hard work. I've been doing this for 36 years, and I started by taking kids into my house. And we saw really hard times, and really good people have helped me. And it's hit and miss. But you know, I leave here today, I go back, I get on the phone. I got a $50,000 payroll that I'm going to have to, you know, make on Thursday.
Now, tell us a little bit about the Without Walls program, the WOW program.
Well, my board of directors basically said, you know, you need to take a good look at Children of the Night and figure out what the succession plan is, because what I do is really magical. It's really it's tough. It's big. It's I deal with really tough kids. And they said, you know, most people aren't willing to work as hard as you and won't have your compassion. So let's get it in shape. You know, so that it can be carried on. So I looked around to see, what do I do that other people don't do, and what am I good at? And it's education, it's mental health, and professional volunteers. And in America, people don't know this, but your federally funded shelters for children only allow a child to stay for 21 days. So they ensure you're on the streets.
Right.
So we went out. I took a young program executive, and I sent her out on the streets, and I said to her, go out to the drop-in centers, the street programs, people who thank their trafficking organizations, the shelters, and tell them we'll do free online GED education to their clients if they let them use computers. And then we started to get really back into the streets, and I love it because Children of the Night came from the streets, and so I get to take Children of the Night back to the streets. You don't have to be a prostitute. You don't have to be you know, under the age of 18. And so you can call in and we'll do an assessment. We'll do tutoring with you. We'll pay for your test. We'll give you a cab for the test. Our hotline backs it up if you get beaten up or if you're in jail or whatever happens in interrupting your tutoring. We will get you there and we will get you educated. And we're moving. Last year, we partnered with Goodwill of California. And I just came back from New York, and I think we're partnering with Goodwill in New York. And we want to take as many people as we can off the streets of America by providing them permanent resources, which is the key, is the GED. It's called different things in different states
right
now. Because without that, you're not going anywhere. It's a union card.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Foundation.
So that and mental health services in terms of tracking people, because if you're, you know, psychotic, I mean, Social Security disability was created for people that didn't have to be on the streets if you're psychotic or other disabilities, but they're there.
Right.
And in order to get those services, you have to have a psychiatric evaluations, 2 interviews, you have to have coordinated paperwork, and we do that. And we're good at tracking people all over the United States, because you know why? Because when they call, we answer the phone.
That's great. Now, but what I hear you saying is that more than just educating them, you're also showing them how they can get the services that are actually in place for them. They just don't know how to get them.
Exactly.
Right.
And there's a big gap between the streets and the bureaucracy of, you know, why don't we have Social Security workers out there on the streets with pieces of paper? I mean, they're out there ringing the bells. Why aren't they out there, you know, filling out the applications and helping people access services and mental health programs? Why aren't social workers in the morning going into a place and they're doing roll call of who they want them to follow up on, of who called the child abuse hotline? Why aren't they accountable? Why can't you tell me what happened in Johnny's house? Why did you leave Johnny there? How many beds are we short in L.A. County? I mean, I really think that Department of Children's Services is a system that is rotten, that is riddled with laziness and inadequacy and incompetency, and it should be restructured like a police model, to where you call and you get a response. May not be the response you always like, but at least it's a proactive, it's a reactive agency. And it's a mess. It's an absolute mess, and it's a poor excuse as an institution to say this is the way we meet the needs of children in America.
Okay. Sounds like bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the question is, which politicians are in a position to change that? If we started
the process.
Yeah.
I have high hopes for Supervisor Sheila Kuehl. Now, she's got more than just this issue. We'll see, you know, where she gets sidetracked and what she can do, because she has other responsibilities being in that position.
Right.
But I would look to, there are a lot of deputy chiefs who could have been police chiefs, who know how to manage big institutions. And their qualifications and their abilities are really significantly better than the people that move around from big institutions and social services. And I would take three of them and I would give them a section and let them go for it. You know, they used to say to me, well, you know, we can't fire any of the social workers because, you know, they have tenure and they have this. And this is back in the days of Chief Gates. And I used to say, well, he tends to fire cops and doesn't seem to have any problem with it. Maybe you should go take some lessons.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
So have you had any interest to where you see yourself possibly trying to run for an office that could make decisions?
Oh, no way. No way. Lie down with dogs, get up with police.
Well, but, okay, but no, you know what? But I want to play devil's advocate on that for a little bit, because I've had the same thing posed to me. I was asked back many years ago to run for office and had a similar answer, not exactly the same, but and now what I'm hearing more and more is that if we don't, in other words, if we've allowed it to get so ugly and so corrupt that none of us do take the initiative, then aren't we getting stuck with what we're left with?
I'm taking my program worldwide. I have, you know what? I don't, and I know how I'm going to do it, and I'm not letting any of those people attach themselves to me. I just, you know, we've had this recent problem with LAPD because of new legislation, Prop 35, where they have to mandated to turn the children over to social services. Okay, you don't need the program. LA County solved with their sex trafficking program. Fine. I'm in with NYPD. All my kids are from New York this week. So I will move. 83% of the children who come to Children of the Night are referred by their parents. And a mom said to me last year, I sent my child all the way from New York to Children of the Night in Van Nuys because it was the only place I could get help for my child who was being prostituted without relinquishing my parental rights.
Wow.
That speaks volumes.
Yes, yeah, it does.
Now, how did
yes,
she hear about Children of the Night? From the cop that rescued her child. And he said, keep your kid out of the system, get your in. And they're doing wonderful things.
But, you know, I'm just listening to you. This is how sad it is. I mean, you know, here it is, a system that is supposed to be help.
Right.
I mean, that's what it was designed for. That's why there's a lot of people getting paid.
Yes.
And you know, and we're not talking about small monies in these agencies. But yet and still, you know, that age of saying, don't get in the system. Stay out of the system. And once you get caught up in the system, you know, I hear a lot when you talk about urban communities, like, you know, once you're caught up in the system, it's you'll never get out. You know,
and the system is a vacuum for those communities. You look at how many kids are of color that are in those systems, you know, how many kids are of color that are in our juvenile halls. You know, they just vacuum up those poor kids who don't know their rights and their families, you know, are too overwhelmed with their problems to fight it.
So true.
Well, we need to come up with something to where it will motivate, you know, people to make change, because again,
well, it's not that, because it's not a matter of developing systems. It's about the individual taking responsibility and doing what needs to be done. And we all do it. You know, one of my complaints about the Right to Life organization or the Christian Right is the fact that it's an exclusive organization. They will sit there at the dinner table or at the lunch table, the homework table, and help all of the kids with their homework and provide cookies and everything. But that 9-year-old boy who's next door by himself, they would never invite him to the table because his mom's a stripper. That's what has to be changed, mm-hmm. That kind of thinking. It needs to be inclusive rather than exclusive. And we've gotten into this whole exclusivity in terms of who's appropriate to be with us or who we can be seen with or what we can do. Wrong.
Yes.
Wrong.
And I adding to that, Dr. Lee, when we talk about systemic change, I mean, from a systems standpoint, systemic change is called outside job in. And systemic change has to happen from the inside,
mm-hmm.
Not the outside.
Right.
And it's a movement, and it's that passion that really makes it work. So just to come into a system and do all the fundamental external changes, the flaws, which are people, are still there.
Yes.
So it has to be an inside job. And usually somebody coming from the outside to go inside who has a fresh set of eyes, their heart's in the right place, can do wonders within organizations. And that's why, I mean, as we're talking and as you were saying, Alan, about the fact of when you talked to Dr. Lee about maybe looking at, you know, looking at politically running or being in office, I think you're a candidate. I mean, we got to start somewhere here. I mean, you know, I think we're going to sit on this side and we'll get behind you because we need that point person. I mean, right?
I agree. I absolutely agree because some people are cut out for it. I'm not going to settle. I'm not going to cut deals. I'm going to do the work.
I'm not a politician. I can't. I can't.
And they'd come to work one day and they'd find all the federal buildings filled with children. So. But you have the patience for that. I mean, and we do need good people, and there are good people in government. But sometimes the problems are so overwhelming that their interests are so diverse. You know, it amazes me. Our kids are writing a book, and Backpage.com of all people is publishing, and the book is called "What I Would Tell Congress If They Ever Asked Me." Now, isn't it pretty amazing that Congress or legislators have not said, "Let's this human trafficking big problem we're all concerned about." Why wouldn't you go into Children of the Night and see the kids and see what the issues are?
Yeah.
Never.
I love the title, by the way.
Yes. And I you're speaking my language. Because I always think when I go onto a campus and there's dysfunction, if I want to know the truth of what's happening, I can go to the teens, I can go to the kids. And they, you know, maybe a little skewed, but if I want to know the heart of the issue, they know.
Right.
If you want to go into a system and make change, talk to the kids.
Right.
But we don't do that. We want to talk to the big kids who got other agendas.
Right.
And it's not front and forward about the
kids. And it's not on behalf of the kids.
Exactly.
It's not on behalf of the kids.
So.
You know, because I agree with you. You can go into any institution, talk to 10 kids, and they may have their beefs about this and that, but you're going to pick up the theme.
The theme, yes.
All right. We've got another email question that is coming in from a listener. This one says, my friend's daughter is a party kid and with a serious alcohol addiction. At 25, she has been in and out of rehab 5 times. She steals, lies, and has become a bully to her entire family. Her mother is frantic and so very worried about her ending up on the street. What advice can you give us?
Again, it's the gift of time. It's the absolute gift of time. Are you willing to say to that child, we're going to do this with you? You know, so often in America, we look at institutions to solve our problems. Oh, you have this, so you go to AA. Not that AA is not a good program because it's an excellent program and we use it a lot. But you just don't go to one meeting once a week and expect them to take care of it. Even they will tell you it's a sense of community. But a parent says, I'll take you to a therapist. I'll pay the therapist $150 an hour and I did my job. No, you didn't do your job. And you should have taken the $150 and maybe gone for the park and had a picnic and, you know, done something else. And it's all about time. It's so simple. We didn't have these problems when we had neighborhoods and we had communities. Yes. I grew up in Los Angeles and I grew up in Carson. We used to play football on the streets, if you can imagine, you know.
And the street, like when the street lights came on, it was time to go home.
Everybody ran home. Yeah,
time to go home. Street lights were on. If you didn't go home when the street lights were on, you were in trouble.
Right here in Los Angeles, though. You know, that's gone. I mean, and my parents are divorced. My mother worked with the lady next door. We came home from school. We checked in with her. We sat there. We did our homework.
Yes.
We had community.
Yes. We've lost.
You know, so. And it's amazing because sometimes the biggest badass guys you think are the ones who could be your leaders, but they need the gift of time. They need the skills. They need the support in order to lead their communities. And they need to be rewarded for it. You know, I spoke years ago through the Police Foundation, a very well-known black gang leader who had retired. And I said, so how did the gangs get involved in drugs? And he said, well, what happened was that, you know, the Italians, they had made a pledge they wouldn't get involved in drugs, but they did. Mm-hmm. And they looked around to see what structure existed that could distribute the drugs. And it was the gangs. It was the black gangs and Mexican gangs because they had the family structure. Where were we then? We should have been competing with that.
Right.
You know, and don't tell me you can't clean up drugs in this country. You can go to the moon, you can clean up the drugs. I can quit the drugs. Can you go?
Competing. How do we compete? What do we do to bring it front and forward? And if we're not willing,
you do what it is that you can. And we can all do something, and we all know somebody who's suffering. Whether even if you're an older woman who's on your own and your kids are grown, and you know that woman next door is a stripper and she's got a 9-year-old boy, and that 9-year-old boy is sitting in that house by himself when he comes home from school, you could do cookies. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You could do the homework with him. Mm-hmm. You could have him teach you how to do, some of the computer games. It's about time. And that's not something you have to go out and start an organization. It's you have to. There's no notoriety in it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There's. It's just a matter. It's all over the place. You don't have to look hard.
That's right.
And there's lots of organizations you can volunteer with. And sometimes the organizations are the worst because they don't welcome volunteers. They're closed off too. But it's not hard to find. You could call your local school. You could ask your local school Head Start programs. Come on.
Yeah, lots of ways.
We all know someone. Rather than talking about the person that wrote the email, and what does she do? Where does she send it? Well, what can you do to spend time with that child? And the belligerence is all because of the alcohol abuse.
We used to always say, my wife and I were out in the community doing what we do. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, how do you have such great impact? I said, we love on them.
Yes.
And they said, we just, what's the formula? What is it? I said, we love on them. Mm-hmm. And love is called TIME. Mm-hmm. Give them some time.
Exactly.
And that's that time and care, it goes so far.
Right.
Yeah. Well, so. And I mean, that's one of the things that we do with, with our adolescent services company. When Marvin refers to his time, we just had a training a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that we focused on was your ability to listen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Can you listen to this young person? If you can listen to them, they're going to stay with you. In other words, if our job is to safely get them somewhere where they can get some help, just be a good listener. Mm-hmm. Give them the time. Know that you are truly listening to them, and you hear what they're saying. It makes all the difference in the world.
Well, I think too, Alan, as you say, when I look at the theme that as we're talking, all the years I've been involved with West Shield and worked with the adolescents, and what has made West Shield, I believe, a company that has stand apart from all the others is having agents that are involved that have been able to use their skill sets at a high level, crisis intervention, but listening, being able to connect to that child or that teen, love them through the process,
right,
and show them that there's something at the end. And that's why I believe that part of that success has been through that process. So keep up the good work.
Well, and speaking of success, I think that everybody that listens to the show knows that I love success stories. So, Lois, please share with us a couple of Children of the Night success stories. We've got just a couple minutes.
Well, I think that the competition of our kids in the science fair, which is regular, it's not one particular child. They're all working really hard. We put 7 kids in college last year. Normally, we put 5 kids a year in college.
Wow.
The fact that I've got kids that are retired Homeland Security.
Something's working.
It's absolutely amazing. And Facebook, God bless it. I thought what a useless little troublesome tool this is. I have more kids that I've helped in years past reaching out to me Facebook. They don't want to be officially involved with Children of the Night because they don't want anyone to know they were involved in prostitution, but they are reaching out to me. And it's amazing. They have kids, and we talk, and they're adults, and they give me solutions to problems, and not just Children of the Night problems. We're friends. We're family. And that's just, sometimes I had a little girl who wanted to be a lifeguard, and it was like that got interrupted through the prostitution and everything, and we put her in lifeguard school, and we went, down for her swim test, and everybody in the shelter went, and we all use a different name, and we all wear different T-shirts and stuff, to protect her confidentiality. But it's like it's family, mm-hmm. and we're able to do that. You don't have to have an organization to do it. I started as a little girl going around knocking on doors, asking people for old toys at Christmas that I could take to the kids across the railroad tracks. Mm-hmm. You either have that compassion or you don't, but you can certainly develop it. And everybody can do something right now with the child who's at risk. It doesn't have to be prostitution. It doesn't have to be sexy.
One thing I can say, sitting here on this at the show today, I am inspired because, when you're in the trenches sometime, when you're going through it, sometimes you feel alone.
Yes.
And I can look at your face while being here in the studio, and I could see the gleam. I could see that, you know, just like being a proud mother.
Yes.
Yes.
And I just, it's all over you. And I just want to commend you to continue to keep, you know, I know without a doubt what gets you up in the morning is you're doing the work that you love, and it's the passion behind it, and you just keep moving because you are in your passion zone.
Yes.
You are in it.
So. But we speak the same language. I mean, I'm here, yes. I hear you. And you know, it's like we come from the same school.
Well, so. Sing it to the choir.
Exactly.
We need to sing to those who can't.
Right.
Absolutely.
That's why we have the
Absolutely.
Show, right?
Well, and again, just to reiterate for everybody out there, and I see that glean too, and it's that of a proud parent, but a proud parent of someone who has helped rescue over 10,000 young people. This is now 10,000 young people that are out there making a positive difference. So I see it as a giant pyramid that you have started and continues to grow. So thank you so much for everything that you've done. And again, for everybody out there, you can go to childrenofthenight.org and take a look at the site. Take a look at how you too can make a difference.
Thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And for everybody out there, be with us again next week as you listen to Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.